I appreciate Greg leading that song that we sang, the last song that we sang before the reading this morning. Some of you might recognize the name of the composer of that song, Tillett S. Tedley. Brother Tedley was a Christian. I understand from some who actually knew him or met him that he was a godly man. He was a gospel preacher. He's an individual who wrote something like 130 songs. I don't know how many of those we have in our songbook that we use here, but certainly he left behind himself quite a legacy just with the music, the songs that he wrote. And certainly the song that we just sang a few moments ago, number 616, into our hands the gospel is given, into our hands is given the light, and emphasizes to us the importance of understanding what we have as God's children, the message that we have, and the sobering thought, the awesome thought that we have such a great responsibility to handle it aright, to take it to others, to make it manifest in our lives as we should. And I think that's what Paul is writing about. In fact, I know that's what Paul is writing about in Titus chapter 2, there in verses 1 through 10, where he talks there in the 10th verse about adorning the gospel. He talks about adorning the gospel of Christ or the doctrine of God. We're going to read that passage again in just a moment, but I want us to think about the fact as we begin this morning that, you know, one of the basics that parents strive to teach their children, want to teach their children, is the fact that the choices that they make, that the actions that they do, the things they do, have consequences. What a valuable lesson that is, and one for all of us to keep in mind. What we do, what we say, how we live, the attitude that we manifest toward others, that has consequences. It has consequences. You know, a parent may tell the child, I want you to know that the name you wear, it means something. We have a good name here in the community among, you know, godly people. Solomon talked about a good name in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 1. He said a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. You know, we may teach our children that, you know, your conduct, you know, whether you're here or whether you're away where we're not watching you, is going to reflect on that name. You might remember the old Andy Griffith episode where Opie is going off to visit one evening. The last thing Andy says to him as he walks out the door is, act like somebody. We kind of threw off on the Andy Griffith show a couple of months ago, but a lot of good, you know, from some of those things. He said, act like somebody. In other words, remember who you are, and those who are parents can relate to that. We teach our children that your actions, your activities, the way you dress, the way you talk, all of those things have consequences that can be far-reaching and very serious. In fact, you know, we can make choices even while we're very young that have consequences that will follow us from now till, you know, till we die. Doesn't mean we can't be forgiven. Doesn't mean that we can't make things right. But sometimes consequences, they remain. And one of those is how we reflect on our name, on our family, how others view us or how others begin to view that name because of the way that we behave. And Paul teaches that same lesson in Titus chapter 2 and verses 1 through 10 with regard to our behavior and the effect, the influence that it can have on others. And he applies that to those who are Christians and those who are members of God's spiritual family. I want us to read those verses again, not because Chance didn't do a really good job, he did, in reading those verses, but I've underlined a few things here that I want us to reflect on, to emphasize just for a moment as we think about that passage again. Titus chapter 2 and verses 1 through 10, there the Apostle Paul says, but you must say the things that are consistent with sound teaching. Older men are to be level-headed, worthy of respect, sensible and sound in faith, love and endurance. In the same way, older women are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not addicted to much wine. They are to teach what is good. so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands and to love their children, to be self-controlled, pure, homemakers, kind, and submissive to their husbands, so that God's message will not be slandered. And we have that underlined there. That it reminds us of the fact that we can live in such a way that the gospel that's been put in our hands, it can be slandered. It can be spoken against because of certain actions in our lives. And then in verse 6, he says, in the same way, encourage the young men to be self-controlled in everything. Make yourself an example of good works. There's another line that we have underlined in that passage there. It says, make yourself an example of good works. Why is that? So that when others see your life, they won't slander. They won't speak against the gospel. They won't speak against the name of God. He says, with integrity and dignity in your teaching. Your message is to be sound beyond reproach. And by the way, we could have underlined that expression there, beyond reproach. That's the way that we want to live, the way that we want to teach, the way that we want to be seen by others. He says, so that the opponent will be ashamed, having nothing bad to say about us. Slaves are to be submissive to their masters in everything, and to be well-pleasing, not talking back or stealing, but demonstrating utter faithfulness so that they may adorn the teaching of God, our Savior, in everything. We want to look at that expression there this morning. Adorn the teaching, adorn the doctrine or the gospel of God. And I want to begin by thinking about for a few moments just what the Apostle Paul means there by that expression, adorn the doctrine, adorn the gospel. What does that word mean? We understand what the doctrine is. That's the teaching of Christ. That's the gospel. That's what we have. That's our standard, our guide that we live by today. But what are we to do as we adorn that message? You know, if you were to look that word up in a Bible dictionary such as a Vines or a Thayer's, you would see such words as this used in connection with that word adorn. That it means to make attractive, to make beautiful, to make appealing. It's the same word, I shouldn't say the very same word, but it's very similar. It's in the same family of words that we find in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and there verse 9. We looked at this text to some length in our Wednesday night study. But in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 9 there, the Apostle Paul says, "And like women also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, shamefacedness and sobriety." And he goes on there. And what he's saying here is this, is that our adorning, the adorning of women, is to focus on the inner person. What should we be seeking to make attractive? He's saying, oh, don't seek to, you know, draw undue attention to yourself by what you wear on the outside. But he said, seek to make yourself attractive, to make yourself appealing by the kind of person that you are on the inside. The inner person attractive with godly character. And going back to Titus chapter 2, there beginning in verse 1 and going through verse 10, the Apostle Paul has some things to say that would apply to different ones in every group. We won't go back there and look at those specifically. That's a good study for another time. But what he's saying here overall is this. One thing we need to keep in mind is this, that our conduct is observed by others. And Paul is telling us here that it ought to be such. In fact, in order to be pleasing to God, it must be such that will adorn the teaching of the gospel. That in our lives, by what we say, how we live, where we go, our activities, our attitude, our demeanor, our reaction when things aren't going well. Then in all of those kinds of things, we present a proper picture of what it means to be a Christian. That we present an accurate depiction of what it means to be a child of God. That is going to cause someone else to say, if that's what's produced in the life of a person by the gospel, if that's what a Christian really is, then I want to be that. I've got to learn more about that and have that. Be that kind of person in my own life. You know, it's not that difficult. It's much easier, isn't it, when we're in an assembly such as this. People who are like-minded, have the same precious faith as the Apostle Peter would write, to say the right things or to, you know, to behave as we ought to. I have yet to see a fight break out, you know, in an assembly of God's people. That is a physical fight. Sadly, I've seen some that were you know, some fights, but they weren't those physical fights like you might see out in the world. But you understand what I'm saying here. It's easy when we're among people who are like-minded, who have the same precious faith, to adorn the doctrine, so to speak. But what we want to think about this morning, what we're talking about this morning is this. What about when we're in the world? You know, Jesus said we're in the world. We're not of the world, but we can't, you know, leave the world. We can't go somewhere and live in a cave and, you know, have food dropped into us every once in a while and just be there by ourselves. We can't turn into hermits, you know, because things are ungodly and unpleasant, are corrupt in this world. What about when we're in the world? When we're at work or when you're at school, you know, when you're shopping, when you're enjoying some kind of recreation, when you're in your neighborhood, in your community, wherever you might be. Are we adorning the gospel in those places, wherever we might be, with whomever we are? Sometimes I'm afraid there's a mistake that's made. People tend to compartmentalize. That is, they think, well, you know, Sunday and Wednesday night, that's my church life. And so I'll dress right, I'll speak right, I'll act right, and so on. But then there are those, I think, they think, well, you know, when I get to work, that's separate from that. When I'm at school, that's different from that. I can act differently. I can talk differently. I can behave myself in a way that I wouldn't think about acting in, you know, in class or in an assembly such as this. What we need to remind ourselves is that, you know, when we're Christians all the time. And wherever we are and with whomsoever we are with. And we need to remind ourselves again that our attitude and our actions, they have consequences. They're going to reflect either positively or negatively on the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the profession that we make as to claim to hold to that message. And so Paul's admonition, it would apply to us today just as much as it did to those people to whom he was writing in the first century. You know, there are a number of texts that remind us that we need to live in such a way that brings glory to God. That would make the truth appealing, attractive to others. Matthew chapter 5, beginning there in verse 13 and going through verse 16. Here Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, as he describes the character of those who would be citizens in his kingdom. He uses a couple of figures here to help us understand the kind of influence we ought to exert, the kind of examples we ought to be. In the prayer that was led, that Brother Jimmy led the prayer in the auditorium class this morning. And one of the expressions he used struck me, I guess because I knew what I was going to be talking about. And he prayed that we be the kind of examples that God would have us to be. That's something we need to pray for, isn't it? We need to include that in our prayers. That we would be the kind of examples that God would have us to be before others. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. Beginning in verse 13, he said, "Ye are the salt of the earth." He said, "But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men." He said, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid." Here you are. And he said, you're a Christian. You're a citizen of the kingdom. Jesus said, you need to look at yourself as salt. Salt preserves. Salt flavors. Salt influences that with which it comes in contact. He said, you're light. Light dispels darkness. Light shows the way. It marks the way for others. He says, a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Notice here, Jesus said the purpose of that good conduct, the purpose of that good example, is not to bring glory to yourself so that people will look at you or look at me and say, well, you know, what a great person. You know, so-and-so is. Brother so-and-so or sister. You know, look, what a great person they are. And yeah, I think we can recognize that. We should recognize good character, godliness in the lives of others. But that's not the ultimate purpose, is it? The purpose is that God might be glorified. Look at the work of God in the life of these individuals. And again, our conduct in the world, it has an impact on what others think of God and His Word. Does that sound a little strong to you to say that our conduct in the world has an impact on what others think of God? What about this? Romans chapter 2 and verse 24. Here the Apostle Paul, as he wrote concerning these Jews here that were so filled with pride and thought that they were God's special, chosen, saved people, he said this about the hypocrisy of their lives. He said, "For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles through you, as it is written." Their conduct that was contrary to their profession affected the way that others thought and spoke with regard to God, didn't it? And so we need to live in such a way that brings glory to Him. Let's think about the fact as well that the Apostle Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. He said, "Dearly beloved," he said, "I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation." That expression there, we're going to come back to that in just a few moments, but that expression there in verse 12, where he says, "having your conversation honest," means more literally, "conduct yourselves honorably among those in the world." Now, you know, one thing that we can expect is this. Christians, godly people, are going to be spoken against. There are those who are going to be so repulsed by the life that you live. They're going to feel perhaps so rebuked by the standard of conduct that you manifest that they're going to want to try to tear that down. People who are going to want to slander your good name when those things may not be true. We can expect to be spoken against. But what is the Apostle Peter saying here? He's saying, live in such a way that it'll be manifest. But that's not true. That's not true. You do that by having your conversation honest, by being able for others to see those good works, by adorning the gospel or the doctrine of God. I want us to look at three brief lessons in conjunction with that, three brief points in conjunction with that this morning, as we ask ourselves, how do we adorn the doctrine of God? How do we do that? What are some things we need to keep in mind as we think about the importance of living our lives in such a way that when others see us, when they see our example, that when they feel the weight of our influence, it's going to cause them to be attracted to see the gospel as something that is appealing. That makes a wonderful change in the life of the individual who believes it, embraces it, and practices it. One of the first things I think we need to remember is this, and that's the fact that Satan is always at work. Satan's always busy. He's that roaring lion that Peter describes in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. He's the one that the Apostle Paul describes in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11 when Paul says, we can't be ignorant of his devices. And we can study God's Word. We can look at the different devices, the wiles of the devil, his cunningness. But I'm convinced as we think about this topic this morning, that one of the things that Satan tries to do is he tries to find something in our lives, not only to discourage us, but to use us to discourage or to hinder others from seeking or embracing or desiring the truth. You know, if the devil can take one of us and use us as one of his instruments to turn someone else away from the truth, to disinterest someone in the gospel of Jesus Christ, what a powerful weapon he has then for evil. Somebody looks at the life of a child of God and says, well, you know, if that's what a Christian is like, then I don't want to learn any more about that. I don't want to have any part of that. I know that person, and their name isn't what it ought to be. Why would I want to associate myself with them? The word Satan means adversary. The word devil means accuser, means slanderer. The devil would like for us to become the occasion for others to slander the name of Christ or the family of God. To find something in us that would distract others from the truth by our conduct. In Luke chapter 11, I think we have something similar in the efforts that the Pharisees were making there, as they tried to ask Jesus a question. They tried to get him to say something. that would turn the people against him so that they could stop the spread of the truth, so that they could undermine his teaching, and ultimately so that they could put him to death. But in Luke chapter 11, there in verses 53 and 54, it says, "And as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently and provoke him to speak of many things." Why did they want Jesus to speak a lot, to talk a lot? They wanted to take his speech and say, "Look, this is what Jesus said. How can you believe that? How can you accept that? Why would you want to have a part of that?" So they could have something to accuse him of. Verse 54 says, "Lying wait for him and seeking to catch something out of his mouth that they might accuse him." And, you know, I think we're aware of the fact that there are people we are with, perhaps on a regular basis at work, at school, wherever we might be, who are just waiting for something to come out of our mouth that shouldn't, so they can have something to accuse us about. Like, you claim to be a Christian. You claim to be a member of the church. And this is how you talk? You know, to have something to accuse. Here's, we see an example of that. Obviously, Jesus, you know, perfectly answered their questions. He resisted those temptations and those errors of Satan. Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 13. We find an example of that in the Old Testament. One of the great accounts we have in the Old Testament is the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem in 52 days, led by the efforts of Nehemiah. Their enemies, they were adversaries, they were the opponents who didn't want those walls rebuilt, primarily among the Samaritans. And some of those are named there, Sanballat and Geshem, and someone named Gashmu down in verse 6. And what they do after their other attempts have failed, they tried to intimidate those people. What did they do? They worked on the wall with a weapon in one hand and their tool in the other hand. They tried to intimidate those people, to mock them. You know, a little a fox could run a hole through your wall. What kind of wall are you building? They tried to get Nehemiah to compromise. Come down into the plains of Ono. Let's talk about these things. And then they tried to hurt his reputation. They tried to find something whereby they could slander him or accuse him of. In verse 6, and we won't spend a great deal of time with this, but you can read it on through verse 13. It says, "Wherein was it written, it is reported among the heathen that Gashmu saith it, for which cause thou buildest the wall." Excuse me, "Gashmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king according to these words." Nehemiah, you've got a selfish purpose in wanting to rebuild this wall. You want to rebel, and you want to be king yourself. What did he think he could do? If he could spread that slanderous message, if they could spread that slanderous message, then they thought they could stop that great work. Well, it was a lie. Nehemiah denied it. He prayed to God, and we see that the wall was finished. But they were trying to reproach him. There we see in verse 13. We need to remember that Satan is always at work. He can't damage a perfect gospel. But if he can, see, if he can cause us to act in a certain way, to talk in a certain way, he can harm the influence that we have with regard to the spread of that message. And so knowing that, when we're tempted to act or speak in an ungodly manner, not only is the devil trying to hurt us, but we need to recognize that Satan may be seeking to use us to reflect badly on the gospel of Christ and to discourage the spread, hinder its spread among others. Secondly, let's think about this. And that's the fact that we need to strive to maintain godly conduct in all that we do, wherever we are, with whomever we are with, to do what is honorable. We're going to look at one text in regard to this matter. And it's a verse that we read just a little while ago, 1 Peter chapter 2, and there verse 12. Here the Apostle Peter is writing to Christians who are suffering. They're being persecuted for their faith. And he's saying, in the face of that suffering, that persecution, he says, "You behave yourselves godly, so that when they hurl these accusations at you, they won't stand. You live in such a way that when folks say, you know, such and such, he's a liar, he cheats, he steals, people can say, you know, I know that person. I know their character. They wouldn't do that." But let's look specifically at what he says here. He says, "Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. We've already made the point. Godly people are going to be spoken against. That's just a fact of the matter. Jesus said in John chapter 15, if they've persecuted me, they will persecute you. The servant is not greater than the master. In Matthew chapter 5, as Jesus there described the persecution that his disciples will receive, he talked about being reviled, that is, being spoken against. And he said, be happy if that's the case. So, you know, that puts you in the same category with the prophets and those who are godly. He says, great is your reward in heaven. But what Peter is saying here is this, is make sure it's not true. Make sure the opposite is evident by the life that you live. And in the face of it, he says two things. He says, first of all, do what is honorable. Do what is honorable. Have your conversation honest. That means that which is right according to God's standard. How do you combat those who would slander you, who would speak against you? You live a life that is honorable, that looks at God's standard and says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to observe it. And you strive to do that consistently in whatever situation you find yourself. We talk about a person sometime and we say, you know, that's an honorable individual. What do we mean by that? We mean by that, here's somebody who's going to do the right thing. You can place your trust in that person, that they're honorable. But then he says this, he says, and do good works. They may buy your good works. You know, the good works there that he's talking about, or that expression, good works, has to do with those things we do that... One definition says this. It says a goodness that has a beauty about it. And it goes back to this matter of adorning the gospel. It's attractive in the sight of those who would behold it. It's something that adorns the gospel. In conjunction with that, Paul wrote to Timothy in a similar text in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. And he said, be thou an example of the believers. This is an outline in and of itself. We're not going to spend a great deal of time with it this morning. But what about us when it comes to the way that we talk? The way that we behave? The matter of love, that's charity for God, for our brethren, for those who are lost, even for our enemies. Our spirit, that is our fervency, our zeal, our faith. When our name comes up, somebody says, that's a faithful person. No, they're not somebody who's going to look for any excuse to be absent. They're going to be present whenever they possibly can. They're faithful. They hold the Word of God. They're faithful to that. They're pure. Their conduct is beyond reproach. There he begins to get to the heart of the matter, doesn't he? We'll talk about that just in a moment. But not only that, he says, maintain good works. What do you think of when you think about Dorcas? You don't think of someone who just simply did all the things that were right. But you think about somebody who went beyond, don't you? Dorcas is the woman who made the coats. And the women, after she died, they're showing the cloaks that she had made for them. She was filled with good works. Aquila and Priscilla. What do you think about when you think about those individuals? Now, we talked about them just a little bit in our lesson this morning. They were people who were concerned about the truth and the growth of the church wherever they went. Aquila and Priscilla, they moved around a lot. And wherever they went, the number one thing with them was serving God. The church met in their homes in different places. They would take a person like Apollos who needed to learn more about the truth. And they would teach him as they should. Barnabas, the son of exhortation, son of consolation. In Acts chapter 4 and verses 36 and 37, there we see good works. Barnabas is laying money at the apostles' feet to have to disperse among those who were needy saints. But as we think about this, we need to understand that the devil is not going to relent. He doesn't give up. It's a lifelong struggle. But God has given us the weapons. He's given us what we need to stand. And then thirdly this morning, let's think about this. And that's the fact that we need to work to have a good report. That's based on good character. And it's founded on good character. Again, among those with whom we live, we work, we associate. In plain terms today, we would just say, you want to have a good reputation in your community, at work, at school.
someone makes a false accusation against you, going to be, no, that's not the way that person lives. That's not the way they talk. That's not the way they behave or manifest themselves when things aren't going well. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Paul says here, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are of good, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report. What's he talking about there? Here are things that if you do these things, they're going to cause you to have a good report, a good reputation among others. He said, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. There's the battleground right there. It's the heart. It's the mind. It's the intellect. It's the will. You know, Satan wants your heart. He wants your affections. He wants your will. He wants your mind. He wants your emotions. God says, I have to have all of those things. Give me every bit of it. Love Him with all of your heart, soul, and mind, and strength. Acts chapter 6 and verse 2. When they were picking out certain ones to take care of a matter that arose there, they were looking for men of good repute. Acts chapter 10 and verse 22. One of the great things we know about Cornelius is that he had a good reputation, a good report among all the nation of the Jews. Same thing is said of Demetrius in 3 John and there the 12th verse. You know, a question that we need to ask ourselves is this. Paul tells us to examine ourselves in 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. And that is, what kind of report, what kind of reputation do I have among my neighbors, those that I associate with, those people that I work with, those people that who are at school, and others? People are watching our lives, even when we're not aware. We're influencing someone for either good or bad. We're making an impression in someone's heart and their mind about the gospel of Christ and what it means to be a servant of God. What if someone were to begin to ask your neighbors, your co-workers, you know, the people you know at school, and say, well, tell me about a so-and-so here. When they say, that's a good person. They don't lie. They don't steal. They don't cheat. Here's someone who obviously respects their marriage bond. They don't use profane language. You know, they wouldn't laugh at a dirty joke. They're considerate. You know, they're kind. They're gentle. They're approachable. Or would there be a different picture? I remember, you're going to have to go back a ways to remember this name. Some of you might, a few of you. There was a baseball player back in the 70s named Steve Garvey. Played first base for the Dodgers. I remember that because we lived in Utah way back and I became a Dodger fan. But Steve Garvey had a spotless reputation. And he was one of those people you thought you could look up to, even as a young person. Someone asked him one time, they said, Mr. Garvey, Steve, why do you live your life like you do? And he said, I live like I think there's a young child following behind me in my footsteps, and they're watching what I do. Now, sadly, there's a rest of the story to that. Some of y'all may remember that. His life really did comport with his reputation. It turned out that he was living the life of a serial adulterer. And obviously, you know, all of that good name and that good character was destroyed. It's a sad story. The reputation or the character didn't match the reputation. But people are watching our lives, even when we're not aware. We're influencing. We're setting an example for someone else or for many others. And if we're adorning the gospel of Jesus Christ, then we're having an influence for good. If we're living a life that's contrary to that teaching, then sadly we're giving others an occasion for reproach, to slander, to speak against the name of Christ and the gospel of Christ. Question we end with this morning then is simply this. Am I adorning the gospel of God? What do others see when they see my life, my words, my conversation, my behavior, my attitude in the midst of not just when things are going well, but especially when things aren't going well? Am I adorning the doctrine or the gospel of Christ? lesson is yours this morning. There may be somebody here this morning who's simply never begun doing that because you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, and you understand what you need to do to become a Christian, to have the forgiveness of your sins, and believing the gospel, turning away from those things that are wrong in your life, confessing Jesus as the Son of God by being baptized in water for the remission of your sins. Or if you're here this morning and as an erring Christian need to make your life right in God's sight, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?